Welcome to the presentation entitled Implementing a Diabetes Registry and Care Coordination in Community Mental and Physical Health Clinics. It is my pleasure to introduce our presenters, Crystal Glover and Jessica Jonikas. Dr. Glover is an assistant professor in the Department of Preventative Medicine at Rush University and a BMO Harris Bank Health Disparities Research Fellow at Rush University Medical Center. She received her PhD in social psychology from Howard University, and her research interests include the study of health disparities and minority health, intersectionality frameworks, and social cognitive processes. Ms. Jonikas is the Associate Director of the University of Illinois at Chicago's Center on Psychiatric Disability and Co-occurring Medical Conditions, located in the Department of Psychiatry. She received her MA in Social Service Administration from the University of Chicago. Her research interests focuses on the promotion of health and self-determination for people with psychiatric disabilities, evidence-based interventions, and the translation of research into practice in public mental health settings. Please join me in welcoming our presenters.
Thank you, Judith. Can everybody hear me? All right. So we're very pleased to join you today to talk about the value of diabetes registry and care coordination in the quest for improved disease management for people in recovery. And I promise you at the end of this, you're going to say, wow, databases are really cool and empowering. I swear. Hang with us. You'll see. It's really boring, but it's really cool. So specifically, we're going to talk about, briefly, diabetes as a public health crisis, which we all know, but I think it's important to really review in some level of detail in order to show how complicated this is and why a registry can be very helpful. We'll talk a little bit about our study. We'll make the case for registries, both in terms of the benefits and the evidence. We'll talk about using a registry to support population management and self-management, which really can be done together. We have some very, very preliminary results from our study, hot off the press, so we'll talk a little bit about that. We'll talk about some key barriers to implementing a registry, a database like this, and some reflections on the next steps. Of course, we want to give thanks to our funders, NIDER and CMHS. Without their support, our work would not be possible, and we have two really great project officers. Also important to this effort, as we've heard a lot about over the past day and a half, is the need for collaboration, that a lot of people are needed to make this kind of thing work when people are managing many different kinds of conditions. So, of course, our center, the UIC College of Nursing, unfortunately, Emily couldn't be here today, Threshold Psychiatric Rehabilitation Centers, and Sheila is here, so I hope she'll chime in and be able to answer questions. And then we had some different people working with us on ophthalmology, on the need for dental care, and the need for neuropathy screening. And we had the same thing in Illinois where dental coverage was revoked for Medicaid clients was revoked during the period of the study. It has now since been given back to Medicaid recipients, which is great. Here are just some of the key partners from the different organizations. And again, just everybody was so committed and we couldn't have done it without all of these people, and I'm hoping I didn't forget people. I probably did. All of the nurses, for example, are not listed because there were many, many of them, and I couldn't make a slide big enough. So, you know, we know and we've been talking about the fact that people with serious mental illnesses are managing multiple chronic conditions that are having an impact on their quality of life, their community participation, their ability to recover. We all know that. But we chose specifically to focus on diabetes for this project because it's having a unique impact on people with serious mental illnesses because they're at very, very high risk for developing diabetes. And the reasons for this, of course, are varied, but some of the special risk factors being overweight and obesity, high levels of stress, barriers to managing a healthy diet, logistical and functional barriers to regular exercise, and a big one for all of us, managing multiple medical appointments and medication regimens, which can be a part-time job. If you have, both my kids have chronic health problems, and it's a lot of work, and it takes a lot of time to manage. And so, as John was saying, sometimes people just say, I've had enough. I can't do all this, and many of us feel that way if we are dealing with multiple conditions. Of course, there are genetic factors involved in diabetes. Certain psychiatric medications cause insulin resistance in diabetes. Poverty, lower health literacy, these things all impact on the experience of diabetes for people with mental illnesses. Perhaps most urgent in our need to address the diabetes crisis, though, are all the complications that go along with diabetes. And again, I know you all know these, but I'm going to say them because I think it helps understand how the registry helps. So people with diabetes are at greater risk for heart disease because of hypertension and hyperlipidemia, greater risk for kidney disease, gum disease and loss of teeth, nerve damage and loss of feet, eye disease and becoming blind. So it's a lot to manage and think about. And perhaps not surprisingly, given all these complications, one comprehensive report tells us that diabetes is the sixth leading cause of death in the United States. And actually, the CDC has said by the year 2050, one in three Americans will have diabetes. It's a huge concern for our country. In the context of healthcare reform, studies show that for people with diabetes, their costs are 2.4 times higher than the costs of serving people without the condition, and that 40% of these costs are due to the long-term complications we're trying to manage. So this critical situation then served as the backdrop for our study, which is called Use of a Registry to Manage Care for Diabetes and Integrated Health Clinics, and it's led by Dr. Judith Cook. Her name comes up a lot over these past couple days. She's a great visionary. We worked in concert with the UIC Integrated Health Clinics and Thresholds Psychiatric Rehabilitation Centers. And again, we just couldn't have done it with all the commitment there. And we heard yesterday that those clinics provide primary care services to people with serious mental illnesses, including our folks who have diabetes in this study. And the clinics were adhering to many of the diabetes standards of care around testing and treatment and teaching people about diet and exercise and referrals. They were, you know, doing a pretty good job with adherence. But historically, as we talked about yesterday, it had been hard to fully adhere to the standards because people often weren't showing up to clinic, and they weren't often following through on their referrals to specialty care, and they were having a really hard time managing their diabetes at home. So even though they had been doing pretty well at the clinics, there was stuff to be done. And so the nursing leadership came to us and said, could we work together to develop a diabetes registry in concert with care coordination to see if we could be doing even better, get our treatment guideline compliance up even more, but also have an impact on the patient's ability to better self-manage their own diabetes. So we said, sure, let's give it a try. We hadn't done anything with registries, and so we had to learn all about that in these databases, and it turns out to be a really useful tool. And I'll just say briefly now, so you have some context when I talk about different studies, that there are different kinds of registries, but we chose a relational database that in which we took information from paper and electronic medical records from UIC, from Thresholds and other specialty providers, and put it all into one place so we could monitor people's glucose, their lipids, their blood pressure, their weight, other sorts of health indicators, along with whether they had been referred to certain kinds of specialty care and whether they went to it for their eyes and their teeth and their feet in particular. So we had three aims, and Crystal's going to talk a lot more about the procedures, so I won't steal her thunder, but we wanted to improve care delivery. We had to develop some new service resources, for example, when dental care was revoked. We wanted to enrich care coordination, especially around the specialty care, because it's a lot for people to manage. And we wanted to monitor these health indicators and outcomes over time. So that's what the study was for that was funded through our center. So let's take a quick look at what is a disease registry. What is a diabetes registry? So first of all, it's a database, woo, yay, containing patient demographic information, diabetes characteristics, treatment delivered, and specialty care that's been arranged for it and also delivered. And again, relevant information is gathered from a lot of different sources, so it can take some time. Don't you like that little bounce? I heard a laugh. I like that too. I like my So as a major component of the chronic care model, registry information guides care delivery by providing kind of snapshots of both individual and population health outcomes over time. So the thing about a registry is you're dealing more at the population level. We were just talking a lot about how we have health records to help at the individual level, and that's real important, but this is taking it up to the population level. So it encourages a proactive response to out-of-range values by calling attention to them, again, not just at the individual level, which is really important, but to say, well, how are all of the people with diabetes in this clinic doing? And so it moves it up to that population level. And reports of clients who have concerning test results can be shared then with specialty providers. And also a registry will allow you to generate patient reminders. So when you see the population, there are a lot of people who are having out-of-range values in managing their illness, you can also generate reminders and help for them to get into the clinic. One of the things a registry does that I think can be a little threatening sometimes is the idea that it can help to monitor team and system performance. So you also can look at how is this clinic doing in managing the population of people with diabetes. It's very busy atmosphere in clinics and rehabilitation programs. You're just like, I got to just help this person today. And it's very hard to stand back and say, but how's our whole clinic doing in helping people? And so sometimes that can just be a little scary to think about. We're going to, on paper, show how your clinic's doing and how your patients are doing as a whole. But it's an important part of performance management, and a registry helps with that. So overall, though, it is, again, to improve adherence to the treatment guidelines and to help people be able to better self-manage their own diabetes. So in thinking about how to improve integrated care at these clinics, we could have focused our effort in several different ways. We could have chosen a diabetes intervention or a glucose self-management program and implemented that and see, well, does that work to help people control their glucose and their diabetes? That's one whole way we could have gone. But we decided our primary focus should be on increasing adherence to the American Diabetes Association's standards of care. And the reason for this is because research shows that the best way to prevent organ damage, health complications, and early death is to really follow these standards of care, as complicated as they are. So you'll see in most diabetes registries that these are the elements that are being tracked. So measurements of blood glucose, which for people with diabetes should be 7% or less. And in our clinics, we were aiming for 6.5 or less, given all the risks that people were facing. Blood pressure should be less than 140 over 90. And again, we were trying to get more to 130 over 80. But the standard is 140 over 90 or less. Bad cholesterol, LDL, lousy cholesterol, as we teach people, should be less than 100. And then there need to be these annual screenings. So you have to have a kidney screening, a dilated eye exam, a foot exam, a dental exam, and lifetime and annual vaccinations. So part-time job. It's a lot to do just to manage your diabetes, never mind your mental illness and your asthma and your arthritis and all the other things. And this is why I think it's hard for providers to keep track of all of this, which is, again, the beauty of the registry. It's a lot to remember, is every single person in our practice doing all of these things every day and every year. So one just point I want to make, because we were talking about it yesterday, is, the sheer time that it takes to coordinate care is a big consideration when you think about whether you can do something like this. And a registry is no exception. You've got to figure out which person is going to find and enter all those data and how they're going to be cleaned and verified and taken care of. So it is a commitment. And in some places, clinicians enter the data themselves during a visit, which is ideal for sustainability, but can be challenging because there's a lot going on in a visit that a clinician may not have time to do it. Some studies I've seen, the clinician completes an encounter form and then sends it to a central location where there's just data entry people who put it in. So that's another, if you have money, that's another option. What we did is have a care coordinator who obtained all of the information, Joni there in the back, and she entered it into the registry after each encounter, which is a lot of work. And then sometimes I've seen where clinicians themselves complete the encounter forms and then hand them off to a care coordinator or a nurse for entry. So different ways, but it's just an important point to make that it is, it's the sheer time of just loading the thing has to be taken into consideration, and you can't bill for that. So there you go. So why am I excited about registries? Why do I think they're so cool? Yeah, if you know me, yeah. So one is, of course, to better meet these treatment guidelines. People really are sick, and they're at risk of early death and a lot of complications that I think make their mental health worse when they don't necessarily need to be. So number one thing is really to get us up to the to the treatment guidelines. And one of the ways the registry does this is it's a one-stop source for all of this information from multiple medical records, multiple providers, multiple encounters, all in one convenient location for people to access right away. So, for example, with the registry, the nurse can have just on one piece of paper or a screen, depending on how it's done, oh, I see when I last saw Crystal, her A1C was 6.5, her blood pressure was 130 over 80, and I gave her some patient education about exercise, and I said that she needed to get her dilated eye exam. And it's all just there on one piece of paper, which is really lovely. And you could get all of that from the electronic health record, but you have to sort through a lot of fields and a lot of different records, and sometimes you have to open different medical records. We found at UIC that even though just down the street is the eye clinic, they have some whole other separate system that doesn't talk to the one the nurses use. So they'd have to get in, and they can get into it, but they have to open it. So what ended up happening is the nurses just didn't have all this information at their fingertips at every visit. It was just too hard for them to be able to get it all from all this, all these different sources. So the registry really solves that problem because it puts it all in one easy report to look at. And it allows the clinic administrators then to assess again how well each clinic is doing in managing the standards of care, and which clinic or which providers are managing the people who are most at risk. And this can then allow a conversation about more targeted planning. So Clinic X seems to have a lot of people whose glucose is uncontrolled. What's going on with Clinic X? Can we get more resources there? Can we get more training there? Is there something about the what the consumers are going through that we can tap the behavioral health support workers around? So it opens a conversation to step back and look at how's the whole clinic doing with the most at-risk people. And depending on how it's constructed, and Sheila and I were just talking about this yesterday, ideally it should be able to be used by providers in multiple locations across sectors. So anybody should be able to open it and look at it and right at that moment get an update on a person, and that is a beautiful thing. If you pick a hard registry to build, that's not always so easy, but there's some really easy ones you can use, and I'll show them to you, that allow just anybody anywhere with the person's permission to get a status update. So believe it or not, registries do support patient-centered care. And that's a primary value that we all held across all of our study partners. And we believed a database actually could support empowerment because it allows the clients to do the same thing that it was allowing the providers to do, which is to see everything all in one convenient place. What am I dealing with and what do I need to manage? And sometimes that can be overwhelming, but sometimes it can be very informative. It also lets them say, see, this is everything I'm dealing with. That's why I'm not, you know, I'm having a hard time with X, Y, or Z. It also lets people, they can take these reports that get generated for them to other providers or specialists so they can better coordinate their own care. And then they can compare their own results and track them over time to see where they're having a hard time so they can direct the conversation. Gee, it looks like every time I'm here, my blood pressure just isn't really getting better. Can we work on that? So it kind of puts the ball in their court too because they have a report of how they're doing. And they can compare how they're doing to their peers or to others just to see how their outcomes are stacking up. And Crystal's going to talk more about how we did this, but a registry also fosters care coordination. Because, again, you can identify who has the most need and where you have to target your planning for care and outreach to specialty providers. You can get these notifications of abnormal test results, who's missed appointments, what happened at the last encounter, all in one place. And again, it puts the focus on the needs of these high-risk clients, which I think is really important in a lot of systems where resources are scarce or stretched. Obviously, we want to help everybody who comes to us, of course. But if you're dealing with a situation where resources are stretched or scarce, a logical place to start is with people who are in the greatest need. And a registry helps really quickly define who that is. And again, we're facilitating then outcomes management at the individual level and then at the clinic level. So a logical next question is just, is there any evidence that a diabetes registry can work? And obviously we want our study to show that, but we're still managing the data. So, but there are some other studies. Here are two large population studies that were introduced across several practices or clinics in different locations. And in both cases, a diabetes registry was introduced in combination with care coordination, or what they called planned care, actually. And so the use of a registry with this planned care, provider supports, and focused self-management it improved adherence to diabetes treatment guidelines. So both the studies showed that there was better glycemic control and better lipid control as a result of the care coordinator using a registry. And in this study, seven primary care clinics in New York, and they were independent practices, they weren't related, so I thought that was interesting. So they introduced a diabetes registry, and theirs was in concert with an educational module about how to communicate more effectively with patients. So they didn't necessarily have a care coordinator, but how do you communicate with your patients effectively? And they also found over a 12-month period that patients with diabetes were more likely to have an A1C of less than 9, although, again, we'd rather see that closer to 7, but with people with diabetes, that's the standard. They were almost twice as likely to have LDL of less than 100 and 1.3 times more likely to have blood pressure under what would be considered hypertensive. One interesting thing is that the likelihood of adherence to using the registry and having these findings decreased over time, suggesting that even with a registry, as we all know, there's a need for ongoing support and training to keep people using the registry and keep their skills up. It's obviously the hope over time that an electronic health record will serve the purpose of a registry, and a lot of places that we've dealt with have said, oh, yeah, we're working on that. Our health record's going to be able to do all that. But if you wait around for all of that, years and years go by and people aren't helped. And we really found in our experience that even if it has some of the ability to generate reports easily, it's not really about it's not at the population level, which is what you want with a registry. It's more at the individual level, which is important for clinicians. But if you want to look at how the whole clinic or the whole practice is doing, electronic health record doesn't do that as well as a registry. I forgot to do my little bullet points. So once you have all of the data loaded into a registry, you can see that it can have almost an immediate impact on client outcomes and clinic performance, because people can see immediately with color-coded simple reports who's doing well and who isn't and what the focus of care needs to be. And again, it can engage clients in their own care, which is something that a typical electronic health record can't do. We know these personal health records can do it, but a typical electronic health record doesn't really do that. So I'm going to have to speed up a little bit, I'm sorry to say. So there are different platform options, and I'm not going to describe all of them because we don't have time, but one is CDEMS, which is the one that we used, and that's a relational database, and it does a lot. It has a lot of functionality for understanding how people are doing over time, but it's not easy to use. And it's hard to display and manipulate the data. It takes a long time. And now the developers of it are no longer providing technical support. So it's out there, but it's not necessarily the best option. There are two other ones, DocSite and Care Measures, which can be used at the hospital, kind of big hospital system level, big systems to build a registry. And they have everything, including pharmacy and claims data and all the rest. You do have to pay to use it annually per provider. But the different studies I was talking about, they use these systems. And then we have Excel, which is the one that I'm going to promote here because I think it's wonderful. It's free. It's easy. You can go download it off the web right now and load up even just all A1C values for the people you're serving and have a registry. It's that simple. Or you could do their A1C and their blood pressure on an Excel sheet, you've got a registry. So it's very good for population management, and it's very simple, and it's free. So let's take a look at a sample sheet. And you'll see the website down here where you can go get this. And you can load it yourself. You can just take out all the sample information and start. So you'll see it allows patient name and sex, date of birth, ID number. You can load the provider. I love that. It's okay. It's okay. You also can load the date of the last A1C test, the date of the last foot exam, lipid test, and blood pressure, so it has all the main indicators that you're trying to track in a diabetes registry, as well as the ability to track some comorbidities. You'll see over here obesity and retinopathy. So all in one convenient place, you can get all this information to have a snapshot of how someone with diabetes is doing. You'll see it's color-coded, so there's a lot of red on this sheet, which means that these people are, you know, past due for a lot of these tests that they need. So you could focus your care planning right on those people. In this spreadsheet, just know that the red comes up when someone is more than 180 days overdue for the A1C. But if you're dealing with people who have type 2 diabetes, take insulin, or have a history of uncontrolled glucose, you want to reprogram it to be every 3 months, the A1C. It also, you'll see the findings that are in yellow, which lets you know that someone is pre-diabetic, so they might need a different kind of care coordination and outreach to avoid going into the red. So it's a very handy, easy sheet that can just focus what you're doing, both at the individual level and at the clinic level. And here's my favorite part. I love this. This is the fun part. So here are the easy reports that you can run from an Excel sheet. And again, that can just focus effort. So one way you can do it is sort by test value. Just lets you see right off the bat who's most at risk in the red there. So in this case, these people are well overdue for an A1C test in the office. So you can do A1C testing at home, and that's fine. But the standard is you also have to have it once every 3 or 6 months in an office. People in yellow are coming up. So those might be people your care coordinator gives a call and says, hey, come on in for your test next week because I want to avoid you going into the red. And then the folks in green just lets you know, good, they're on track, they've done what they need to do. You can run a different kind of report in which you sort by test date to determine who's overdue and who needs care coordination. So this is the eye exam, and you can see all the people in red, it's been more than a year. People in yellow are coming up, so again, you can give them a call and say, I want to keep you out of the red, get in for your eye exam, let me help you do that. And the people in green have recently had their eye exam. And that just takes seconds to run once the data are loaded, so it's very handy. And lastly, for performance management, which is always a scary word for people, but just to, by provider and clinic, see how things are going. So you can support, you sort it first by provider and then by the value, the test value, and you can see here Dr. S has a couple people who are in the red and a couple people in the yellow. Dr. A, a couple of people in red and one in yellow. And so you can track over time, is there something about Dr. S? Is Dr. S in the red a lot? And does Dr. S maybe need some more clinical supervision, some more training, maybe more resources and support? Or maybe that person's in a clinic just where everybody's having a hard time. So, but it opens the conversation to say, what's going on with this provider or clinic that they're in the red a lot? So you can use these simple reports for performance management as well. So it's really cool and easy. And it solves a lot of the problems that we were talking about yesterday about these big electronic health records that can't talk. This is the bridge. So, you know, eventually, someday, hopefully, those records will talk. But in the meantime, we have a bridge, and it's called a registry. And it just is a very convenient way in one place to see how people are doing and how your clinic is doing. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Crystal, who will talk about some of our how we did it and our results. Well, preliminary results.
Am I going the right way? Oh, down. There we go. Okay. So before I went to Rush, before I joined Rush, I was with Dr. Cook and her crew working on the Diabetes Registry Project. So we had five big goals for our registry, and one was to adhere to ADA standards. That's a really big thing, especially with care coordination. I would even say that the registry goes hand in hand with care coordination. That's the way I thought about it. The second piece was to link participants to specialty care, especially dental, optometry or eye, and podiatry foot. Those are big things for people with diabetes. Also, patient education, teaching patients about their disease, the disease process, what they need to do, as well as how to self-manage themselves, very key. So also developing new resources. So as Jessica said, during the middle of the study period, Illinois Medicaid revoked or did away with dental coverage at that time. So we had to be creative about dentists and other providers that we would look toward. Also monitoring health outcomes over time. So looking at the clinic level, also seeing the patterns of what's going on there. Okay. So before I fully get started, I want to talk about the three pieces to the registry, so to speak, or the three partners. So of course there were the center that we all belong to. But we populated the registry, which I'll talk a little bit more about later, but that was such a big piece. And also we provide the care coordination, Joni, in the back there. And she was the liaison between the clinics and thresholds, which was phenomenal, a very big piece. We work with the UIC College of Nursing, so they actually had the IHCs, or the integrated healthcare clinics, so where our patients belong, patients with comorbid diabetes and mental illness, and then thresholds. So they house the IHCs, one on the north side of Chicago, and one on the south side of Chicago. And before I move on, I just would like to say, John Brecky, thank you for sharing the training so we can get Joni up and running at the beginning. That was a big ramp up for us. Okay. So talk a little bit about the actual registry. So as Jessica said, we use CDIMS. So it took a little bit of time to really fully understand CDIMS, a lot of tutorials, a lot of trial and error between Joni, Dennis, myself, which a lot of long days, but great. And then we found out shortly after that the technical support for CDIMS was ending. But we had an okay grasp at the time between the three of us, so we carried on. So this database is relational, but it housed demographic variables, illness-related lab results, et cetera. Also treatment expected or needed, and then treatment received or delivered, as well as specialty care. So do they need a dental appointment? When are they going to have it? And did it happen? Though that's the big thing, I must say, specialty care. Am I hitting the button? Mm-hmm. Okay, good. And so our baseline data came from 2011 IHC clinic visits. We were updating this every time a patient made a visit to the IHC as well as to specialty care. That was a lot of work on Joni's behalf, my part, Dennis, and we had to really work close together in order to keep that going. But the great thing about this, once we got it up, were the reports. So we were able to generate clinic reports as well as patient reports. So I'll talk a little bit more about that later. But that helped us adhere to the ADA standards, American Diabetes Association standards, as well as the clinic understand what's going on, the nurses, and then the patient. So I feel while registries are good for population-based, I do see the individual element there being managed, the individual or patient, the provider, and then overall with the clinic, which I think is very elegant. Okay, let me just click through that. So the procedures we had really rested heavily on the reports. So every time a patient was due for a visit, Joni would populate or create a report for that patient. She would then deliver it to the provider, make sure they had it. What that was sort of a snapshot. So when the nurse came in or provider, she could see, okay, this is where this person is at with A1C, specialty care delivered or not received. Just what do we need to focus on? Also, this was really big with patient education. If the A1C was too high, specialty care not received, or any other barriers, then we would know the patient education piece to be delivered. So I'm going to talk a little bit more about patient education in a moment, but just to give you a little bit of the process. So we also shared this patient education with the community support workers at thresholds, sort of like a triangle where you had care coordination, thresholds, and then the providers all focusing in on this patient education. And also specialty care needs were identified for each patient. Some people didn't have problems with eyes or feet. Big problem was with dental, as we'll see later. So really paying close attention to those ADA guidelines. So here is a sample of our patient-specific registry report. So this is what went to the nurses. So when a patient's coming in, when Crystal's coming in for her appointment, say prior, the night before, I believe we had it scheduled, where they would receive a printout for all patients that were scheduled to come that day. Now, it was a clinic, fully functioning. It can be touch and go. So Joni was really on the move with being able to provide reports in the moment if needed. So the nurses and other providers can be aware of what needs to be talked about during the meeting, as well as any patient education that needed to be delivered, and so care can move on. So also we have the demographic information, which is really great. And then if you see right in the middle, that's where we have the foot risk assessment, which I really loved. Yes. And something that I found to be very important is hospitalization right in the middle, because I do see that as, even if with my further research, seeing that as a big deal. Okay. This is the patient report for, we delivered this to the patient so that they can self-manage. They can have an understanding of where they are. So what it is, right up here in the right-hand side.
Yeah. I'll be your Carol Merrill.
Okay. And the right-hand side is really key, because you can see the right-hand side is really key because it gives you a range. So when you have that value for the patient, it's not like, oh, okay, I'm 7.2, but what does that mean? It tells you, are you normal? Are you above? What's going on? And that lets you center yourself as to what you may need to do. Patients became really invested in that, and that was a big deal. So also it helped patients become aware of their conditions, their disease process, as well as how to further self-manage there.
Down here.
Oh, yeah, we worked a bit on right at the bottom, the eyes, teeth, and feet check mark. That corresponds with our specialty care, just to say, hey, have you had it done or not, and what may need to be done?
That was your idea, right, Judith? I think you had that, just to do a check mark. It's done, very simple, easy to read.
Yeah, and I remember going through the data with Joni and doing those check marks. Quite fun at that point. So this here took a bit longer, and we worked with quite a few people, including threshold staff and really the nursing staff, especially Ann Heesacker, Sue Braun, Emily Brigel. And so we identified key elements of diabetes care. So it ranged from everything from carbs to what is A1C, cholesterol, also how much water to drink, or if you drank too much water, what may happen. And so with the patient report that the nurse received, we could see, okay, if the person is out of range with A1C, they may receive the A1C education. If their lipid profile is a little off, they'll receive that patient education. So it was tailored to the person where they were at the time of that visit. So our sample, we had 217 people. They came from the IHCs, Northside, Southside Clinics. They had comorbid diabetes and SMI. So it was 67% male. Over two-thirds, or more than 60%, were minorities. The age range was between 20 and 77, with about a mean of 51. We almost had a half-and-half split between North and South, but North was a little bit heavier, which is really weird because I believe the North clinic is smaller than the South clinic, so that was always a big thing. Okay. So the next few slides, I would like to talk about our preliminary analyses. And this is the part where I get excited, being an analyst and looking at this and combing through it. So I welcome any questions afterward in case I'm not clear going through the first time. But we performed a series of pre-post tests. So pre-time is between 2010 and 2012, okay? Post is 2013 and to 2014. So first we're looking at A1C, big indicator. Next slide will be lipid profile, and then we'll look at the much-needed specialty care. So here, as you can see, which was really exciting, is that we see a significant decrease in A1C level during the course of the study. And that one point, if you can see, that's the third bullet down, that's associated with 25% better or more improved life outcomes in terms of cardiovascular outcomes for these individuals, which is huge, very exciting stuff. It's all the same for the lipid profile. I must note that the individuals at PRE were within a good range to begin with. However, being that these individuals are so at risk for so many different other comorbidities, it is important to keep them either in range or decrease as time goes on. And this is what we saw. During the course of the study, just a small preliminary study here, we saw a drop, especially in total cholesterol and triglycerides, really, really big. And then here, I want to spend a little bit more time on is the specialty care. So when we started the registry, there were not too many things in place. I would say while the IHCs did very, very well in most areas, they just did not have time to seek out optometrists, podiatrists, especially dentists, very much so especially. They did not have time to coordinate that. That's where Joni came in. And so during that time, we identified podiatrists, optometrists, dentists that may be able to serve our population, link them, made sure that both thresholds as well as the IHCs knew about these individuals and the appointments. So it was really almost a rage against the machine. You were constantly going with the appointments, making sure things were getting done, but it was very exhilarating at the time, and it came out in the data. Especially we saw an increase in all specialty care during the course of the study, but I really want to hone in on dental. That had, at PRE, we were at about 2.6, I believe, 2.8, and that's very low, you know, that individuals have dental care at that point PRE. However, during the course of the study, the registry, we were able to boost it up to 16.6, so that's very significant. But this was also during a time where Illinois had revoked the dental coverage, so we became very creative about our approaches. Joni was constantly in true care coordinator form, taking patients to and from appointments, making sure things were going on. I was very proud of that, to see this during the analyses. And we also saw a similar increase in podiatry and optometry. Okay. I'll just go through and put them all there. Okay, sorry. Sorry, Jessica. But we had key barriers to registry use. So while it proved beneficial, there were some roadblocks along the way. So in the IHC, shifting from reaction or to proactive, it was a bit of a challenge. These people are running busy clinics day to day. They have competing interests, individuals with multiple illnesses, also they related to thresholds, so a lot going on there. So it was sort of a little paradigm shift for them, and that, if you're in the mode of doing your own thing and also doing it well at the time, that can be difficult. We just wanted a little bit more adherence to ADA standards, especially with specialty care. Also, moving from individual to population-based. That's focusing on the individual there is important, but also seeing what's going on with our group. What's going on north side, south side, Chicago, why? How are these people looking? That gives us an idea to common barriers that may be faced by the population. If everyone, or you see an overall trend of high A1Cs or carb control, or you need patient education surrounding water, that can give you an idea of what may need to happen clinic-wide. So that was really big. But the way I looked at the registry was having individual and patient-centered provider and also clinic. So I saw it that way. Also getting multiple partners invested. The foundation we had was that we were all interested in investing in improving the lives of people with comorbid SMI and diabetes. So we started with that foundation, which was awesome. But each group has their own focus, their own way of doing things, and also their own timelines and goals. So it was important to discuss that early on, get everyone on board, and have constant communication, which I found to help, especially with the care coordinator. That person did a bulk of the liaisoning between all three of the partners that I discussed earlier. I can't stress enough the database. That took, to me, the most time, because not only do you need to populate it based on the past, so 2010 to 2012 for us, but you need to keep it current. So it's almost a dual data entry interest. So you have populate all the past, but also keep it current. So that was another part of the piece that you know, that's what I believe Excel may be a little bit better for that. And also measuring performance, especially in the clinics, may be a little bit threatening, but look at it more as a challenge, or really delivering top-notch care can alleviate that. And also making sure that we know it's just not a fad. So as Jessica stated a few moments ago, was that, and also I believe the folks from Trilogy, that the tech world has not really caught up with us yet. So until then, this is a nice bridge for us to have EHRs, EMRs speak to each other, understanding comorbid conditions and getting that care delivered. All right, I'll speed it up. I think I talked a little. But here are some reflections and next steps. Excel format, so not necessarily I wouldn't go with CDEMS just simply because of the technical support issues, but also it helps coordinate efforts, which is a really big deal. Also, the role of the care coordinator or the behavioral case manager. So I believe Lisa said yesterday that we have individuals coming out with bachelor's in, say, psychology or social work, but a more of a focus on medical outcomes for those individuals may help, so they can understand A1C. They can understand the disease process of diabetes a little bit more, so they can be knowledgeable about that as they go into their roles, liaisoning between healthcare providers, both mental and physical. Also, integrating patient education, health literacy, and self-management. I find this very patient-centered, because not only are you focused on the provider and the clinic outcomes, but you're focused on educating the patient on their disease process. What are their markers? They can take that, discuss it. They can even discuss it with family members if they so have that support, and I think that's a very big deal. And also making sure the staff are well, and that the staff can not only be well for themselves, understand the issues, but then deliver good care. So I will wrap up by saying thank you. I know I had to get through that. But if you have any other questions where I'm not clear, more explanation, we're ready. Thank you.